Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We should have a really interesting hour this hour. Not that they all aren't terribly interesting, but when do a politician's words go way beyond the pale, as described by one of our guests this hour, and perhaps make it very difficult for objective journalists to be covering this presidential candidate's campaign? Of course, we're talking about Donald Trump this hour of the program, and actually two pieces, one from the Columbia Journalism Review, another from the New York Times, examined the role of journalism in covering the Donald Trump campaign. The Columbia Journalism Review piece, and the guests will be with us who wrote that piece, compared modern-day journalists to Edward R. Murrow. After months of holding back, they are citing the candidate's comments that fall outside acceptable societal norms, and some are acting a lot like Murrow. It started with a question from Fox News' Megyn Kelly during the GOP presidential debate. She said this, and this will get us rolling. We'll listen to what she had to say during that debate, which was a year ago. Can you believe that? I had to look at the date and say, no, it couldn't have been that long ago, but it was a year ago. We'll listen to what she had to say. She'll frame the hour, and then we will meet our guests. Here is Megyn Kelly confronting Donald Trump.
Mr. Trump, one of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides, in particular when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account...
Only Rosie several... O'Donnell.
No, it wasn't. Your Twitter account...
Thank you.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
So how has the press dealt with Donald Trump? Have they been, she was particularly hard-hitting a long time ago, have his comments made it very difficult to cover this campaign in an objective fashion? And because he says so many things that get so much press attention, does it take attention away from Hillary Clinton, who perhaps also needs to be examined pretty thoroughly? We have two guests with us. Our guests are Professor David Mindich. He's a professor of media studies, journalism, and digital arts at St. Michael's College, and he wrote the piece that we were interested in letting you know about in the Columbia Journalism Review. He's the author of Just the Facts, How Objectivity Came to Define American Journalism, among many other books. Professor Mindich, thank you so much for being with us. Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. David Folkenflake is also with us. David, no stranger to public radio. He's the media correspondent for NPR News. He worked before coming to NPR at the Baltimore Sun, where he covered higher education, national politics, and the media. He's the author of Murdoch's World, The Last of the Old Media Empires, and also editor of Page One, Inside the New York Times and the Future of Journalism. David, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Well, thanks for that discursive introduction. I appreciate it.
And I could have gone on. I even shortened it. I got to tell you, this whole campaign, I just don't know what to make of it at times. You've got a candidate unlike anybody I've seen in my lifetime, and it must make it incredibly difficult, Professor Mindich, let's start with you, to cover this in some with some kinds of rules that used to apply to how journalists cover campaigns.
Right. You know, the model for most of our lifetimes was that a writer for the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, for example, writing, or the Washington Post, writing on the front page of his or her paper, would be writing a political story with the hope that the readers wouldn't know how he or she voted, for example.
Right.
And the idea for more than 100 years has been objectivity, detachment, balance, scrupulously rendered on the front pages and throughout the newspapers and on television. So what we're really seeing now is a departure and I would argue that really hasn't been seen since 1954, when Murrow was very specifically criticizing McCarthy in his show.
Mm-hmm. David, you are in touch with a lot of people in the media, many people who are covering this campaign. Do people discuss among themselves whether or not some of these comments do call for Edward R. Murrow moments?
You've seen that discussion in some ways more out in public view than you have in private conversations. You've seen, for example, Tom Brokaw in some ways has stepped into that
role.
Yes,
he has.
He has twice made very pointed and tough commentaries on the NBC Nightly News, not something that you've seen Brokaw do much over the years, as a way of criticizing the kinds of rhetoric that Trump has offered on, I believe, at least two different occasions as being un-American. Not saying that he's un-American, but saying that the rhetoric is. I do think historically we should note a little bit that the Murrow moment, it was a magisterial moment, a powerful moment, what Edward R. Murrow did in calling out Wisconsin's own Joseph McCarthy. But nonetheless, it was at a moment at which public sentiment had started to shift against McCarthy, that it wasn't that Murrow articulated something and then people suddenly clapped something in their forehead, said, my God, but that it was that he crystallized and galvanized opposition to Murrow, as did, of course, the Joseph Welch, the attorney for the Army in the Army-McCarthy hearings. So without getting too much sidetracked, I think that that's used as a stand-in to say, should we stand up? And I guess, I've reported and talked a lot about the issue of covering this campaign, but particularly covering Trump. And there's this old joke that Woody Allen uses in one of his movies where he says, he has claims these two retirees are complaining about the food, and one of them says it tastes so terrible, and the other says, and in such small portions. And in this case, I feel as though the food tastes terrible, and it's been in such large portions. We've had so much coverage, until really about a month or so ago, so much coverage of Trump, and so little of it, I think, was substantive in the right kinds of ways. There was a lot of fact-checking and a lot of outrage, even in straight-ahead news reporting to some of the rhetoric, but really examining the implications of the rhetoric, really teasing out the seriousness of some of the substance of the implications of what he was saying, and really looking, and we can get into this in more depth over the course of this hour, but really looking at his business record in the way that any politician's public record would have been scrutinized and examined had a more conventional politician been catapulted to the top of the Republican ranks. Mm-hmm. I think the press didn't do that sufficiently, didn't give Republican primary voters enough substance to work with as they made their own decisions in the ballot box.
Well, we look at the way the press, particularly television, cable television, David M., covered Donald Trump, and they just sort of turned over the cameras to him. The president of CEO of CBS, making no bones about this. It may not be good for America for us to do this, but it's damn good for CBS.
Right. And ratings are a powerful lure. I think that the networks and newspapers and media people of all stripes really were drawn to the possibility of ratings. And not only ratings in a crass sense, but that's what people are talking about. When I get together with friends or if I'm sitting in a restaurant listening, eavesdropping in on the conversation of the table next to me, people are talking about Trump. Whether they're Democrats or Republicans or Independents, Trump is really sucking up all the oxygen because he's just such a novelty. Whether you're a supporter of him or whether you think he's dangerous, he sucks up the oxygen. And that's actually what David Folkenflik was saying. I completely agree with it, but I'd also add to that we are also in a situation in which we talking about the fitness of Trump, but I don't see a lot of discussion about issues, policy, for example, tax policy, the estate tax, abortion rights, foreign policy specifics. I mean, we're talking about Trump's comment that Obama and Clinton were founders of ISIS. I mean, it's an outrageous comment. But we also should be talking about policy differences between Democrats and Republicans, and we're just not doing that. It's just all about Trump right now.
And we're also not talking all that much, David F., about Hillary Clinton.
Well, look, I did a hard-edged piece that ran on last Friday on Morning Edition, some prime real estate as far as NPR goes, to talk about her complete lack of taking any press conference, formal press conference, since I believe last December, mm-hmm. and that's ongoing, and we're pushing to do more coverage about her, and I'm in the midst of doing more coverage of her interactions with the press and the extent to which she's showing transparency. And we certainly on the campaign trail, places like NPR and the New York Times are definitely doing coverage of Hillary every single day, substantive, illustrative, different bites at the apple. But if you look at the most read pieces, the 5, 10, 15 most read pieces, almost all of them will be Trump. And that might not just even be the most read pieces from the campaign trail, but the most read pieces for the entire news organization. Look, when you quoted that CBS line earlier, Les Moonves, the chairman of CBS, absolutely made no bones about it. But in some ways, CBS is the least of the offenders. It's really the cable news organizations that have so much real estate to turn over and did so unexpurgated to Trump throughout you know, the past year, really until we hit essentially the conventions, because it was as though it was a live sporting event. You did not know what was going to happen next, which all television programmers will tell you is the key way to get people to turn in live. And so the cable networks would just keep him on the air because they didn't know what was going to come out of his mouth. And whether it was an outrage or whether it was hilarious or whether it was a flip-flop, you didn't know. And therefore, people turned in. And I got to say, that was the great problem, which is not that CNN, which actually has done some wonderful reporting this cycle, isn't willing to hold him to account and has, I think, in some ways stepped it up. It's that for months, they also turned over their shows to interviews with him, live rallies to him. Right. It meant that the other 16 Republican candidates could barely get a coffin, and it drowned out Hillary Clinton. But let's be clear, Clinton has made it not just a tactic, but a strategy to let him absorb all the oxygen. That is to allow him to emanate not only headlines but gaffes, to damage himself in the polls, and to step back and prevent herself. She's had a complicated relationship with the press, often fairly brittle or hostile at times, certainly edged. She's not always done herself favors in certain kinds of live and unscripted settings. This allows him to get her out of that spotlight, let her be in scripted settings and be away from the press, which mm-hmm. I'm, you know, not in favor of either.
Right. How do you, Professor Mendich, let's give this to you for a moment. At what point can you, a journalist, acceptably cross a line when you have a candidate talking about the Second Amendment, using that in terms of Hillary Clinton, some thinking that he said, did he really say that, to use violence against her? But he said other things at other rallies, too. A protester was being removed from the premises, and he's talking about the old days when a protester would be carried out on a stretcher. He'd like to punch the man in the face. He said that about others, that they used to treat protesters really rough, and they wouldn't do it again so easily. We've become weak. This incident in North Carolina when somebody sucker punched a black man in the face, and Trump says a violent behavior in general at his events, the audience hit back, and that's what we need a little bit more of. When is it proper? I mean, those are really alarming kinds of statements for a journalist to sort of cross over and express perhaps human concerns about a presidential candidate saying things like that. And I'm just quoting a few of the things he said.
Right. You know, so the clip that you played at the beginning of the show was Megyn Kelly just reciting back to Trump
what he said,
things that he mm-hmm. himself had said. So, in fact, if you watch the Murrow report from 1954 about McCarthy, it actually, a lot of his show is just that, just stringing together McCarthy's quotes, and that's very easy for a journalist to do. It's the easiest, and not to diminish it in any way, it's the easiest thing to string together quotes and let the words hang the candidate, and that can be very effective. The Trump campaign famously uncredentialed the Washington Post after a series of just factual articles. And so that can be very effective. But what we're seeing now also is journalists weighing in, like when Anderson Cooper said to Trump, when Trump said about a fight that he was having with Cruz about showing pictures of the campaign wives, the candidate's wives, Trump said he started it, and Anderson Cooper said, with all due respect, sir, that's the argument of a five-year-old. So, you know, journalists are weighing in a way that is unusual in campaigns and crossing a line. But I think the examples that you cited really are beyond the pale. I mean, even as a joke, even if we can give Trump the benefit of the doubt that he was joking about the First Amendment thing, a joke about that could be construed as calling for the assassination of either the candidate or the Supreme Court justices, I'm not sure which, is really unacceptable. And it certainly is, it can provoke violence in unstable people. So we heard yesterday that that the Secret Service spoke to Trump, but that's the kind of thing that, you know, journalists are try to be objective, but ultimately they and all of us are in the democracy business, right? We want to promote good, strong democracy. And when we hear statements like that that are really principally anti-democratic, it's important for journalists to step in.
Hmm. What do you think, David Fulkenflik?
Well, look, I think that we're in an age where we have more than three broadcast networks and two or three national newspapers, and they set the agenda and they get to make the only decisions. I think different news organizations have different rhythms and presentations. You have ones that are ideological, ones that are, you know, more aimed at millennials or more aimed at older, more affluent readers. You know, you just have a lot of different kind of news organizations, and different ones are going to take different approaches. The Huffington Post has a disclaimer on every story that it runs involving Trump's, calling his rhetoric bigoted and racist and xenophobic, mm-hmm. and a variety of other things. BuzzFeed doesn't append that to every story, but it says that its writers have the right to essentially convey that in its articles very bluntly and directly. And certainly, you know, they're ideological, actually, on the right and the left, that have assailed Trump in all kinds of ways. To me, you know, Jim Rutenberg, in an article I think you alluded to at the top of the show, really said that, you know, it was time to do extraordinary journalism and to set aside in a certain way certain strictures limiting journalists' ability to address Trump because of the extraordinary nature of his campaign, his, you know, I would add not only the nature of his rhetoric, but his, you know, untethering from fact. The fact he just says things that aren't true, and that he's simply contradicting himself, and not simply that he's misspeaking, but that even in the face of actual information, he is asserting things like the idea, utterly untrue, that President Obama, you know, is the founder of ISIS, just simply not possible or true, and untrue in a variety of ways, and very offensive to boot. That said, I take issue a bit with Jim, who I have a lot of respect for, in that I don't think that journalism stepped up and exemplified its best practices and its best performance, even by standard practices. I think that journalists allowed a lot of things to slip by, in part because there was a tsunami of misinformation coming from Trump and the Trump campaign at times toward his Republican opponents as well as towards his Democratic one. I think that they didn't do enterprise and investigative reporting enough to hold him accountable for what he has done. To look hard at his record. It was BuzzFeed, you know, a social media site based on virality and on popularity and that people associate with cat pictures. It was BuzzFeed that went deep into the archives and found, you know, Donald Trump's in some ways most declarative statements on the Iraq war on a Howard Stern interview before the invasion of Iraq, in which he said, yeah, basically he supports it. Or maybe it was just after it. But regardless, it was in that era in which he said he supported the invasion. Well, Trump on the campaign trail to this day and this week says that, you know, he was the only guy who knew to oppose the invasion of Iraq. Simply not true, rewriting history. But, you know, his relationship with hiring illegal or people here without legal status work for him,
right.
Polish immigrants who are not here legally, to do work for him on his sites. The idea that he's clearly a multi-billionaire, not clear. The idea that he's an incredibly successful businessman. You know, a lot of these things not successful at all. Multiple bankruptcies in his business enterprises and scores of lawsuits. I just think there was a whole lot of stuff that Trump was allowed to get away with. So the idea that we have to cast aside journalistic standards or journalistic practices in order to do this, I think we have to live up to our highest ideals.
Oh,
by that, by the way, I don't mean in the idea of objectivity where everything is perfectly even and everything is perfectly measured. I'm a believer in this. The way I describe it is earned conclusions. And the idea there is that you do your best reporting. You don't carry a brief for any ideology if you're at a news organization like Wisconsin Public Radio or the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel or anything like that. You don't carry a brief for an ideology or a candidate or a party, but you carry a brief for the idea of the truth and the public you're serving. And if somebody is proving not to tell truthful statements, you say so. But you have to show your work. And you have to allow defenders to make the best case in the other direction. And then you test that case. And then you, if you think you can prove what actually happened, you lay it out there for readers and for listeners and viewers. And I don't think there was enough of that until very recently.
And David, do you think it's, let me ask both of you this, is it because nobody could imagine that he was going to be the nominee? They just thought, well, this is just a P.T. Barnum show. It's going to be over, and somebody else like Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio is going to be the nominee, so we're just going to let it ride.
You know, I think there is in every election, you know, this honeymoon period. I mean, not really honeymoon period, because the press has been, you know, has run a bunch of stories that are critical of all candidates. But there is a sense in every election that before the convention, certainly, candidates are not held to the same standards as maybe afterwards, which is a shame because, you know, you want this hard-hitting reporting all the way through. But, I mean, I think that now everyone is starting to pay attention more, and, you know, a statement that was seen as carnival-like before is now seen as, wait a second, this guy could actually become president.
Let's welcome phone calls for both of our guests. How should the press be covering Donald Trump? Some interesting pieces that caught our attention, and thus we thought, well, let's do a show on this in the two places. One was written by one of our guests in the Columbia Journalism Review. Another you may have seen in the New York Times. We're talking about if the press was complicit in helping to create Donald Trump and how in the world you deal objectively with a candidate like this who has said so many things that are way beyond the pale, perhaps. And does it keep the press from doing a thorough examination just because what he says is so outrageous, that's where the cameras go? Does it keep a lot of news outlets from doing thorough investigations of the Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton? Okay, I think we're going to get a lot of calls on this. Here's how you reach us. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter @KDunnShow. We have two guests with us, David Folkenflik, who's the media correspondent for NPR News, Dr. David Mindich, professor of media studies, journalism, and digital arts at St. Michael's College. He wrote the piece in the Columbia Journalism Review. To you in a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls, gentlemen, and we'll start with Stan in Madison. Hi, Stan.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Here's a theory that I just want to suggest, see what your guests think of this. What if Donald Trump is just crazy like a fox? Maybe he's not unbalanced. As most people think, or at least a lot of people think. And maybe the one he fooled was really himself, that he never really intended to be the president, that what this was all a game from the beginning, and he was very surprised at what happened, and once it got going, he couldn't stop it. And now he's trying to seek a way out, and that way out is to say the more and more outrageous things. And maybe he's just building up the ante at this point. And this latest suggestion that ISIS was actually conceived by Obama and Hillary, maybe that's really where he's really going with this, just trying to get out of the whole thing.
Okay.
And wants to collapse.
David Folkenflik.
You kind of had me there to the end. I guess I'd say that from talking to people who've known Trump for some years, they think he was sincere in wanting the attention of a presidential bid and reveled in his success. Let's remember that Trump, I did the math on this at one point. I looked at Real Clear Politics rolling average of polls, and from about July, the early July of last year to the conventions, for all but a 2 or 3 day period, Trump was ahead in the Republican polls. I mean, it's just astonishing. And this is sort of blended average of all these major polls. I think there was a 2 or 3 day blip last November where Ben Carson tucked ahead. And I think that Trump was happy to have the attention and didn't really expect this. And then this kind of got away from him and said, let's run with it. Let's have fun. So I don't think that he was looking for a way out per se. You know, Ross Perot did pull out twice when running for president 20 years ago, two decades ago, I should say. And so, you know, there's the ability to flirt and get out. And he had opportunities to do that and did not do that. So I think at this point, you know, he's in it to run it. And if he doesn't win, I think he's going to think that he's going to be able to cash in or take a very long vacation, as he put
as
it
he
recently.
Said. Right.
But, you know, the fact that the American press corps and the Republican establishment itself didn't take him seriously is a failure to listen to the people who were talking to pollsters and talking to reporters. And they took him seriously, even if Trump didn't always do so.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Dan, for your call. Tom in South Beloit. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, good afternoon to you all. Your guest talked earlier about the fact that the media, to a degree, didn't care about what was going on because it was selling eyeballs and getting viewers. Isn't the big problem, though, is that they're covering a thing like a horse race and they're trying to sell stuff instead of what their actual job should be, which is to say candidate X has this as a policy and this is what the effect of this policy is going to be on you and on the country, and educate the public.
Professor Mindich.
Yeah, so I think it's a fair question to raise. I do think that you know, David Folkenflik and the rest of the folks at NPR are doing a very good job of talking about policy as well. I think that there are some networks and some newspapers that are doing a better job than others, but I think that everyone tends to be at least tempted by the ratings draw of someone like Trump, and that the real test of the quality of a news organization is the extent to which you can resist these rating pressures and offer analysis about policy, analysis about the health of the democracy, what the politicians will bring to the country and to the future. So I think that it's a very difficult thing to make broad conclusions about how the media are covering it, but I think that we have a lot of good examples, but unfortunately in the context of this real lure to push the ratings.
Yeah.
And if I could jump in for just one sec, very few people are going to be more critical than I am on certain elements of the coverage. You know, I think we're all going to wake up with a terrible hangover, you know, 6 months, a year from now, and say, you know, what did we do just there? But at the same token, you're finding press corps overwhelmed because in recent memory, they haven't confronted a phenomenon like this. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely the lure of clicks and particularly ratings for cable news. I think that CNN is just going to be awash in a degree of revenue they didn't have a year or two ago. But and far beyond what they usually get a bump presidential years anyway, but the bump this year will be significant and impressive. But I think that they didn't know how to deal with this phenomenon. You know, it was one thing when they said, gosh, Ronald Reagan tapped into truths but was untethered from certain kinds of facts. You know, Donald Trump is not tapping into either kind. He's tapping into certainly anxiety about economic dislocation. He's tapping into some real questions people have about globalization and about resentment of the changing face of America, questions about concerns about immigration, all kinds of other things. But on the whole, he's not really tapping into truths at all as a fundamental appeal of his campaign. But reporters just didn't know how to deal with that. And no matter what they wrote, if they wrote straight ahead stories or edged stories or whatever, there would always be something else they had to dart on. It's almost like having an adrenaline burst shot into your veins at 15-minute intervals. So to be fair to them, they were overwhelmed. They really didn't know how to respond to this. Katie Tour, who's a reporter who's been covering the campaign for NBC, did a really nice essay for Marie Claire about what it's like, particularly what it's like when part of the candidate's appeal is so explicitly defined by hostility toward the press and toward the very people in the press who are tasked with covering him day to day.
Yeah. So it's almost impossible when you look, Professor, let's go to you on this. When you look at how he made his name, the whole thing about the president wasn't born here and just this ridiculous untruth, it went on and on and on from him. And now you've got, you know, the Muslim ban and what he said about Mexicans and what he said about the judge. I mean, and the list could go on. How can you possibly have any kind of conversation about who should be president, as we've done in the past, looking at issues, when that's where he veers the conversation, and you can't help but pay attention to where he veers the conversation, or maybe we shouldn't pay attention to it. So it precludes being able to have a rational discussion about some of these important issues.
Right. And so what happens is if you look back at the Republican primaries, Trump would say something outrageous, but not wouldn't only be Trump who was quoted. You'd get a Ted Cruz quote or Rubio quote. But when they'd be speaking, typically the press corps would quote them talking about Trump.
Yes, right.
And they learned that, you know, pretty quickly that that the Republicans, if they wanted to get press, I mean, Jeb Bush famously, would stand up from time to time against Trump, and that's how he got his press attention. So it does draw all the oxygen out of the room. But, you know, when you're talking about specifically the Muslim ban, this is a very serious policy question. I mean, do you ban a whole religion from entering the United States? And, you know, if Trump becomes president, if he's able to enact this, I mean, this would have a profound effect on who we are as a country and our foreign policy and our domestic policy and whether we monitor mosques. I mean, this is serious stuff that that we have to pay attention to. And I would argue that as journalists who care about democracy, we would have to push back at in an overt way, which makes us uncomfortable, but it still is important to do. Mm.
Interesting. Thanks, Tom, for the call. Barbara on the road. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Kathleen, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
What I was going to say was that one of your guests made a comment about that traditionally candidates are given a different kind of coverage and questioning before the convention than after, when they've actually become the candidate or the nominee. And my feeling is that that's part of the problem. I feel like if Trump had been scrutinized, during the primaries, when people actually had a chance to determine whether they wanted him or another Republican candidate, that he might not be the nominee. And even before the conventions, we need to hold candidates' feet to the fire about the truthfulness of what they say, and not just let it slide because it's not the convention yet.
Mm-hmm. David Folkenflik.
Yeah, I'm happy to associate myself to that opinion. I think Republican voters deserve the opportunity to have a full understanding of the candidate before his or her nomination. And the idea that you only give full scrutiny once it's general election is foolish, even if you accept the idea that these two parties are essentially private organizations that can make whatever rules they want. The government can regulate in certain ways what happens because the public has an interest in these major parties as well as presumably minor ones. But I think, you know, you played the clip. I think it was very telling from a variety of directions. Megyn Kelly earlier in this show, really pushing Trump. And she was pushing Trump, and it was important a couple ways. One, it showed an example of a journalist who was not thrown off balance by Trump making a mean-spirited but nonetheless a joke to try to distract her, which is, he said, well, I didn't insult women, I insulted Kelly O'Donnell. And she said, no, that's actually not true. You insulted a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
And she really tried to get at that. And he, in that moment and in that debate, there were nine other candidates. It was the primetime Republican debate in August of last year in Fox News. He made that debate about him and Fox News. He turned on Fox, which did one thing of really actually throwing Fox off balance for months, because it's usually seen as sort of a safe space for conservatives and Republicans and a place that likes to arbit and to umpire Republican primary races. The other thing that it did was that it really showed his willingness to just sort of deny a certain kind of reality of what comes out of his mouth. if you think about his rise to political prominence, I mean, the guy has pretty much 99%+ name recognition as far as this thing goes on the level of somebody who served in national office. But as a political force, even though he flirted with a run in 2000 on Ross Perot's Reform Party, he rose in 2011 because he was the most prominent person in the country who was a birther, that is, who questioned strongly the idea of whether President Obama was really born in this country and claimed that Obama probably wasn't eligible to be president. That is, he was delegitimizing the right of the president of the United States, the first African-American elected president of the United States, to be president. And that gave him a certain base of support among people either frustrated with the president, people who have concerns about the degree to which this is a more multiracial, multicultural country, or people, probably a small minority, but nonetheless people who were outright had racial hostility to the president because of his racial background. And that willingness to cling to the idea, despite all evidence the contrary, in fact, despite all proof to the contrary, by Donald Trump got him there. So the pattern that we're seeing, it shouldn't be considered an unfamiliar one. And the fact that that issue was not given, I think, more play and more centrality in the early coverage of him and questioning, you know, whether or not he is who Republicans want to represent them in this race, I think is a small but telling element of what all came subsequently.
Thanks so much, Barbara, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. The conversation this hour, if a politician's rhetoric is dangerous to all of us, including journalists, are we complicit if we don't stand up and oppose it? Our number is 800-486-8655. We have two guests with us, David Folkenflik, media correspondent for NPR News, Professor David Mindich, who's a professor of media studies, journalism, and digital arts at St. Michael's College, and author of an interesting piece on this very subject in the Columbia Journalism Review. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jay in Pewaukee, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to bring out the discrepancy as far as so much coverage of what Donald Trump says, you know, as far as he's only been in the political arena for the past year. Before that, he was a private citizen. And there's really been hardly any scrutiny of what Clinton has done, you know, actually accomplished in her political career over the past 30 years. So I think there's a huge difference between just what he says and what Clinton has actually done. And, the coverage is totally unbalanced as far as covering Trump.
Okay. Professor Mindich?
The caller said that there's not been a lot of scrutiny of Clinton.
Right.
I don't see that at all. It seems that she's had a lot of scrutiny. And I think Trump is getting scrutiny now, but wasn't before. I've had a few people push back and say that what I was calling for, which was a strong pushback on Trump's most dangerous comments, was unfair. That in fact both candidates should be held to the same standard. And I would argue that the candidates are being held to the same standard. That if Clinton, for example, would as a joke suggest that Donald Trump should be assassinated, that she would get pushback, and she should. I think we're just in uncharted waters right now, and I think that I really liked David Folkenflik's line about earned conclusions. I think that journalists are applying, in a way, the same standards to both candidates, but that there are there's a completely different, for example, fidelity to truth, and there's a different sense about the details behind policies and also how unprecedented the policies are from Clinton to Trump. I mean, the comparison is you really can't make a comparison between these two candidates. And I think that, in past campaigns, whether you agree with Romney or not, or Obama or not, at least the two of them had a sense of fidelity to the truth, and if they made a mistake, they would walk back a statement. I haven't seen Trump walking back statements of fact. he really, it's, I don't know if David Folkenflik could weigh in on this, but I haven't seen any other campaign in my lifetime that has as little interest in correcting the record.
David?
Well, you've seen, you know, there's been a push to make fact-checking and truth-squatting more explicit in recent years. And I think actually Wisconsin has an offshoot of the PolitiFact venture up there in some news organizations. But, you know, PolitiFact and FactCheck and, you know, various news organizations doing different kinds of truth-squatting have tried to hold folks accountable and I think on the whole have done a nice job. There were some claims that this was working against Republicans, and so there were some claims to cast that in partisan light. You know, on issues of climate change, the Congressional Republican Party has been so hostile to the overwhelming consensus of scientists, not exactly on how it will play out, but the fact that you know the Earth's climate is changing, it's getting the global temperature is getting warmer, and that man has humanity has contributed significantly to that. That you know that alone will cause a distortion in the number of so-called untruths or misstatements or even outright pants on fire designations that are given, and that there are analogous ones in science that have proven inconvenient for various interest groups for Republicans, although there are some cases in which that's true for Democrats as well. But there's been an attempt to deride this journalistic movement as somehow a partisan venture, which I do not think it's doing. I think journalists are trying to say we're not simply stenographers. We're not simply going to drive the bus wherever we're told to go. We're going to try to referee this. We're going to try to fact check it. We're going to try to be honest brokers for our audiences who are inundated with so much information that is either unmediated or unfiltered or unverified that we've got to do more to step up and try to help filter for them. I mean, think of what the media does. The media is accused of being a filter for information, and that is true. It is the prism through which so many people consume the world around them, but they can get things from interest groups, from candidates, from corporations, from labor unions, from whomever quite directly. And I think that the difference between news and content and information is quite real and quite striking, and that the press has a role to play. This campaign is utterly uninterested in whether the media thinks that they're saying something truthful or factual, and in fact, that's a feature rather than a bug of the campaign. They see it as inoculating that Trump can say whatever he wants. His attacks on the media allow him in a sense to discredit whatever results from the media as a result of what he says. Yeah. So it's for him a virtuous cycle rather than a vicious one.
Yeah. Do you think if it had been any other candidate but Donald Trump, Professor Mindich, we would have seen much more investigation of Hillary Clinton's email problems, which really haven't gone away, and she's been accused of being less than truthful in some of her answers about what the FBI investigation showed, or investigations into the Clinton Foundation? If it had been anybody but Trump, would we have seen more of on that?
Right. Well, part of that is Trump's inability to really stick to the to Clinton's real weaknesses, which include this email issue and the Clinton Foundation. And so a more disciplined candidate would have done that, as opposed to Trump, who right after the Democratic convention spent a lot of time attacking the Khan family, the family of the soldier that was killed. So you know that's part of it. You know, you can ask yourself, you can do a thought experiment. Let's say Trump dropped out of the race today. Would we, as citizens, be prepared to decide Clinton versus whoever else is running in lieu of Trump? And I think the answer would be no.
Mm-hmm.
I think Trump has sucked all the oxygen out of this discussion. We don't have a discussion about abortion rights or tax policy or foreign policy. It's just about how outrageous Trump is. And so I think in the next few weeks, I think we can all hope that journalists get more disciplined about talking about policy and more disciplined about talking about Clinton and her her policies and her failings and her issues, and not have it all be a referendum on Trump's outrageousness.
Jay, thanks for your call. Jeff in Madison. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, Kathleen, I'm not even sure where to begin. I'll try to make this short, but I feel you, while I respect your guests and I've heard them before and have a lot of respect for them, I think they are absolving the media of the responsibility that the media must take for his creation. He is a media creation, and I've heard things in the show that said, he has sucked the oxygen. He is outrageous. He's not walking back statements. He's a little interest in correcting statements. This is all created by the media. The media prints it. It rolls the cameras. I'm wondering what's next. All right, we've got him for now. What's next if some relatively unknown or newcoming candidate strips naked and runs down the street shouting four-letter words? That's novel, too. That's a novelty. Is the media going to report that as something interesting or something that we have to know? We didn't have to know about all his falsehoods. It's the media that has simply given them to us. Your guest said we are in uncharted waters. Well, I really feel it's the media that has trim the sails on this one and has sailed us right into those waters and now making it look, I'm not a Trump fan, as you know, but making it look like this is somehow a result of the campaign. This is a result of the reporting on the campaign, and we've been talking about the need to talk policy for over a year. I'll listen off air.
But Jeff, before you go, what do you think the press should do now?
I think they should hold him every time he says something. The reporters in the room should fire back, should be well prepared and fire back, say, Mr. Trump, you know that's a lie. Tell us the truth. And be very straightforward. Instead of just reporting lies, we don't have to hear them. Why listen to lies a second time, and a third time, and a fourth time? There is no need to report that nonsense. All right. We know they're lies.
Thanks, Jeff, for your call. David Folkenflik.
What I would say is the following. I would say that Donald Trump is not a media creation, but I offer one of the biggest caveats in the world to that. He is a self-creation. He is a guy who went out there and he very cannily learned as a young real estate guy in New York City, financed largely by his father, was something that he denies. He learned how to push the levers of the popular and then the establishment press to gain attention. He was given an incredible boost by Jeff Zucker, then running NBC Entertainment when he ran Celebrity Apprentice and the Apprentice shows, reality shows, to sort of introduce himself to America's living rooms beyond the budding entrepreneurs who would have bought his bestsellers, promising them insight into how to make fortunes, and of course spending $21.95 a piece to learn about that. And Jeff Zucker now runs CNN. And these guys all ran on cable nets, as David and I mentioned earlier, these incredibly long, essentially unfiltered feeds from his rallies. It's not the coverage. You've seen some very decent coverage. People like Katie Turr really taking him on at press conferences. Jorge Ramos of Univision really challenging him on immigration at press conference. Jake Tapper, I think, really drilling deep on what seemed to be Trump's inability to disassociate himself from his flirtation with certain kinds of white supremacism and racism. His lack of willingness to do that. And his own statements, for example, against a Mexican-American judge in Indiana, the idea that somehow that person would be instantly biased against a lawsuit involving Trump University, I believe, in that state. There have been a number of cases where the journalists push back. The problem with the media is not that it created Trump. Trump is a self-creation, from the beauty pageants to the real estate to the reality shows to dominating the tabloids to the multiple wives that are his sort of escorts and glamorizing elements that keep him in the headlines. What the media did was it enabled him. It didn't provide a check, and it gave him just unparalleled and unprecedented swaths of time to say whatever came into his head, and people ate it up, and you and I, meaning the American people, tuned in to watch it at extraordinary levels. Mm-hmm. And what I would say is that there are some precedents in terms of his populist take, in terms of some of the racially charged rhetoric. If you look at George Wallace's campaigns for the presidency a generation or two ago, But you know, even in Lester Maddox running for governor in Georgia, the way the press had to figure out how to deal with his explicitly racist appeals to voters. In this case, the press was overwhelmed. I don't excuse it. I think that we have much to hold ourselves accountable to. But you are seeing a lot of reporters trying now to hold him accountable. David Farenthold for the untruths that he made about his own charitable donations. The Washington Post's coverage has been excellent on that. But they should have been doing this all along. They knew how to do this to conventional politicians like Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. Didn't know how to do this to a self-creation and a business figure like Donald Trump.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. Thanks to both of you. Thanks, Jeff, for your call. And what we should be is in the democracy business and perhaps governing in poetry, which would be nice. And we're not getting much of that, are we? Thank you both, gentlemen, for being with us this hour. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. David Folkenflik, media correspondent for NPR News. Professor David Mindich, professor of media studies, author of a piece in the Columbia Journalism Review talking about how in the world the press covers the Trump campaign. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and to Kiri Salinas for on-air production. We'll be with you again on Monday for All Things Political. And some great shows coming up next week. We're going to celebrate with Jack Mitchell, who put this whole network together, our 100th birthday, which is coming up. Thanks for listening.